time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
People have been saying there are too many mutual funds since the 80s.
For all the talk of smart beta, they haven't pulled in huge assets. The active managers are showing up in the ETF space.
Sumeet, so we're going to talk natural gas and oil today. And let's maybe start with natural gas, because there was some wild action in that market last week. Nat gas futures were up 18% on Wednesday, then down 18% at one point on Thursday. Before we talk ETFs, any sense as to what was going on here? What was driving these price swings?
Sure, Nate. And thanks again for having me. So, let's get into that big price swing we saw in natural gas recently, and it's still going on. I mean, just yesterday, we saw moves of 11%. But anytime we see big short-term price swings in natural gas, it almost always comes down to the weather. In the summer, we're always asking, how hot is it going to get? Because the hotter it is, the more electricity people are going to use. And then in the winter, it's how cold is it going to get? Because the colder it is, the more natural gas people are going to use to heat their homes. This year, we're getting actually one of the coldest starts to the winter heating season in recent memory. Normally, that alone would be enough to boost natural gas prices at least a little bit. But then you add on top of that the fact that inventories heading into the heating season are peaking at the lowest level in 15 years. And those two combined are simply a recipe for a big rally, and that's what we're seeing. A frigid start to the winter, low inventories equals a big price spike. It really is that simple. Now, obviously, this isn't the first time we've seen something like this. You go back just to 2013, 2014. During that winter, which was a brutally cold winter pretty much throughout, you know, December through April, we saw a similar move in natural gas, big price spike, where prices doubled to $6.50 per million British thermal units. This time around, prices are starting from a lower base, but we've almost doubled also. The low for this year was around $2.50. At the recent high, we got to around $5 almost. And like you said, Nate, one day last week, prices were up 18% in a single session. Now, as you can imagine, you know, when you're up 18% and then down the next day 15%, that's going to have a dramatic impact on natural gas tracking ETFs. And that's exactly what we've seen. Something like the United States Natural Gas Fund, UNG, which tracks natural gas futures, after the recent price spike, is now up 64% year-to-date. And then you add leverage on top of that. For example, with the Velocity Shares 3x long natural gas ETN, ticker symbol UGAS, that's going to give you 3x the daily exposure to natural gas futures. That thing's now up 157% year-to-date. On the other hand, anyone who's bet against natural gas is getting absolutely creamed. The Velocity Shares 3x inverse natural gas ETN, DGAS, is now down 91% year-to-date. Now, the last thing I'll say about this is, interestingly, even if you're investing in natural gas equities, you're losing money even after the recent price spike. If you look at the First Trust Natural Gas ETF ticker symbol, FCG, that holds a basket of natural gas stocks. It's down 15% this year, and it's fallen over the past week, even as natural gas prices have spiked much, much higher. What that's telling me is that investors don't think that these higher prices in natural gas are going to be with us long term. They think it's a short-term weather-related spike.
Sumeet, you mentioned the triple levered plays on natural gas, which, by the way, these are certainly not recommended for anyone outside of the most sophisticated investors. I think we need to put that caveat out there. But these are just so much darn fun to talk about. And the inverse version, you mentioned the Velocity Shares daily 3x inverse natural gas ETN. Last Wednesday, it actually had a higher trading volume than SPY, which is the most heavily traded security in the world. It traded 169 million shares, which to me is just ridiculous. But I guess for both that, the inverse version as well as just the long version, do you mind explaining high level how these things work?
Yeah, sure, Nate. So like you said, UGAS and DGAS, they're leverage ETNs. And specifically, they're aiming to provide 3x the daily return of near-month natural gas futures. And I have to emphasize daily returns, because over long time horizons, you can't expect leveraged ETNs like these to track three times the returns of the underlying commodity, simply because of how the math works out. There's been a lot written about, you know, how these products tend to decay over time, but that's a whole other discussion. That said, these are extremely popular tools for really aggressive traders. We see a lot of retail investors and retail traders in particular using these, and there's actually more than $1 billion in assets in these two ETNs combined. So let me give you a basic example of how these products work at a very high level. So assume, you know, one day natural gas futures rise in price by 1%. Something unleveraged that tracks natural gas futures, like the United States Natural Gas Fund, UNG, it's going to most likely rise 1% also on that day. But something like UGAS, which is three times levered, that's going to rise 3%. And something like DGAS, which is inverse and three times levered, it's going to fall by 3%. So, you know, we mentioned those huge moves we saw last week where natural gas rose by 18% in a single session. That had an outsized impact on UNG, but for the leveraged ETFs, it had an even bigger impact. UGAS actually rose 60% in a single session, and then we saw DGAS fall by a similar amount. So it pretty much goes without saying. I mean, if we see moves like that, these products are only for the boldest, most aggressive traders who can handle moves like that on a daily basis.
Yeah, and there was actually some talk last week that DGAS, the inverse version, might have to be liquidated or terminated, like we saw with XIV earlier this year, XIV, the inverse volatility ETN. Sumeet, do you think an ETN like DGAS can impact the underlying market at all? You know, there was talk with XIV that short covering by that fund caused volatility to spike higher. There was sort of a feedback loop there. Do you think something like that can happen with the nat gas market?
I mean, it certainly could happen that on a day where we see a massive move in the natural gas futures market, particularly to the upside, that could force DGAS to maybe unwind its position and frantically try to cover its position in a disorderly manner. And then that goes on and adds more fuel to the upside move in natural gas and so on. But in order to see that happen, we'd have to see a really incredible spike in natural gas. I think much bigger than we've even seen, something to the tune of, you know, 20-30% move, where people then think that, you know, one of these ETNs is at risk of completely shutting down, like we saw with the volatility ETNs earlier this year. Because we have to remember, you know, these are three times leveraged ETNs. So technically, if we saw a 33 1/3% move either up or down in natural gas futures prices, the value of one of these ETNs is going to hit zero. At the same time, the value of the other one is going to double on that day. It's simply how the math works.
We're visiting with ETF.com, Sumeet Roy. Sumeet, let's pivot to oil here. About 6 weeks ago, crude oil hit a four-year high, $77 a barrel. Since then, it's down to around $55 a barrel. What's going on with oil?
So oil is a very different story than natural gas. You know, you've been focusing on the weather when it comes to natural gas and how natural gas prices are moving to the upside. Oil has nothing to do with the weather, and it's gone completely in the other direction. We've been down. We've been breaking records as we've fallen. At one point, oil was down 14 straight sessions. That's absolutely incredible, and it's the longest losing streak we've ever seen in oil. And the reason for the drop in prices, I think, is the bullish expectations that the market had with regard to Iranian oil supplies never came to fruition. So you go back to last October, oil hits a four-year high around 77, and traders were basically pricing in the possibility that Iranian exports could fall precipitously towards zero because the U.S. sanctions that were going to impact the Iranian oil industry were going to go into effect in November. So to get ahead of that, you know, drop in Iranian exports that everyone thought was coming, you had producers like Saudi Arabia, Russia, and other OPEC producers hiking their output aggressively to get ahead of the Iranian sanctions that were coming and to keep a lid on oil prices. Then November rolls around, and the U.S. government surprisingly announces that they would grant waivers to 8 countries and allow them to continue importing a lot of Iranian crude oil. So basically, you had this scenario where other producers had hiked aggressively to offset a loss of Iranian exports, but that loss of Iranian exports never came. So the market, you know, was kind of caught flat-footed. You know, it was a big surprise that the U.S. government granted these waivers. And then suddenly the market had to contend with this huge supply from Saudi Arabia, from Russia, and even from the U.S., where production is absolutely going gangbusters, up 2 million barrels per day. So it's really an oversupply situation that we're seeing. And the International Energy Agency, they came out a week ago, and they said supply could outstrip demand by 500,000 barrels per day in the fourth quarter. And if current supply growth trends continue, supply could outstrip demand by 2 million barrels per day by the first half of next year. That's kind of bringing back memories of the 2014 to 2016 crash when we saw oil drop as low as $26 a barrel. Right now we're at $56. We're not nearly at those levels, but a lot of traders are scared that we could get back there sometime.
All right, so tell us about oil-related ETFs. I know you wrote a piece on this for ETF.com last week, and you know, it's funny. We had you on the show back in October, not too long after oil was hitting those highs, and we talked about how oil ETFs were among the best-performing ETFs this year. That's all turned around now, right?
A complete 180, Nate. I mean, it's been astonishing how fast these oil ETFs have reversed. Like you said, best-performing to worst-performing in pretty much a month and a half. You take something like the Velocity Shares 3x Long Crude Oil ETN, ticker symbol UWT. It was literally the best-performing ETP of 2018 at one point. I wrote about it. And now you look, and it's one of the worst performers. I looked yesterday, and I saw UWT was up 100% year-to-date as recently as October 3rd. And then now it's down something like 20% year-to-date. So 120% swing in a month and a half. You see that same reversal in other oil ETFs like the United States Oil Fund, USO, a gain of 34% in early October. Now it's flat today. And then even energy equity ETFs like the Energy Select Sector SPDR Fund, XLE, it went from a gain of 9% to a loss of 5% in that same time period.
Sumeet, we have about 2 minutes left, and I know we're talking about ETFs more directly related to oil and natural gas, but I did want to ask you about high-yield bonds. I saw a tweet last week from Bloomberg's Eric Balchunas, so he had a great chart showing junk bond ETFs with the highest exposure to energy-related debt, and I think I counted 11 ETFs with over 15% allocation to the energy sector. And of course, if you think back to December 2015, when we saw some of the issues in the high yield bond space, including the Third Avenue Fund blow up, you know, a lot of that turmoil began in the energy sector. Do you think that should be a concern right now?
I think it's something to keep an eye on. And you rightly say, Nate, that a lot of the junk bond ETFs, they have high exposure to energy. I think, you know, you look at the biggest junk bond ETF, the iShares iBoxx High Yield Corporate Bond ETF, HYG, the weighting in energy is about 15% or so. But again, you know, just like you said, Nate, we saw this story play out back, you know, when oil prices crashed in 2015, hitting a low of $26. A lot of those junk bond ETFs, they cratered along with crude oil. And we're kind of seeing the beginnings of that now. Junk bond ETFs are starting to sell off. But I think they're selling off for reasons unrelated to oil. We've heard about, you know, how we're late in the economic cycle, how we have trade war concerns, how we have interest rate fears. I think those are the bigger drivers of junk bond ETFs right now. If oil prices keep falling, that's another matter. We could see that becoming more of a factor in junk bond price movements. But if you go back to 2015, a lot of the bad apples, a lot of the energy companies with heavy debt burdens, they were washed out during that downturn. So the sector as a whole is somewhat on firmer footing today than it was back then. So I think it's a somewhat different situation because of that.
Well, Sumeet, great insight as always. I think this will be interesting watching moving forward. Really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you.
Pleasure to be here, Nate. Thanks for having me again.
That was ETF.com, Sumeet Roy.